Today, GE announces a breakup. What's open and closed for Veterans Day? Bay State makes changes to its visitors policy. Water and sewer help for low-income families. And Eating Place in Feeding Hills for 40 years says goodbye. Jordan Goodman looks at everything, from infrastructure to cryptocurrency. And Mark Auerbach went to the symphony. And it's all coming up.
Pioneer Valley Radio is proud to present another installment of Brad Shepherd today. Here's
Brad Shepherd.
It's Wednesday, midweek on Pioneer Valley Radio. The date is November 10, 2021, and every year the retailers rush us into the holiday season, also known as buying. And they do this sooner and sooner, and this year it's compounded by a predicted shortage of goods and some bare shelves now. So this is to get you motivated, and to get you motivated pronto, I suppose. Here's your shopping weather. Becoming mostly sunny and breezy for today, high between 58 and 62. The winds are northwest, 5 to 15 miles per hour. And for tonight, scattered clouds, a low of 26 to 32 degrees. The National Day to Support Nonprofit Community and Cultural Organizations is Tuesday, November 30th. And Mosso, the musicians of the Springfield Symphony Orchestra, is proud to participate in Giving Tuesday for the first time. And monies raised will go towards live streaming a future concert, so music lovers can enjoy quality classical music at no charge. So Mosso is asking you to help them raise $2,500 to make that happen. Now on Tuesday the 30th between 12:01 a.m. and midnight, you can make your tax-deductible gift at their website, and everyone can play a leading role in Mosso. General Electric announced Tuesday morning they're breaking up into three separate publicly traded companies focused on aviation, healthcare, and energy. By creating three industry-leading global public companies, each can benefit from greater focus, tailored capital allocation, and strategic flexibility to drive long-term growth and value for their customers, investors, and employees. CNBC has reported this decision is split into three companies. It's coming as a result of their stock, shall we say, underperforming for years following the 07-08 financial crisis. Different holidays always have different rhythms of what's open and closed. So I have a brief rundown for you for Veterans Day. Most restaurants, retail stores will be open for business. The following locations will be closed during the holiday: banks, federal offices, schools, libraries, municipal offices, the post office, and the RMV. Jordan Goodman now joins us, and America's Money Answers man is mulling over the two infrastructure bills, inflation, supply chain issues, and even cryptocurrency.
Always glad to be with you, Brad. It's been a busy few weeks and a very tense few weeks on Capitol Hill, as they love to say, with the two bills battling it out, and the president says the polls continue to drop. It looks like the moderates and the progressives have come to some degree of accommodation on one bill, but the big one is still in the balance.
Well, but they did pass the hard infrastructure bill, which has been very suspicious that it was ever going to pass. In the end, the progressives caved because they had said before they would not vote for the hard infrastructure bill unless they would get the soft one. But in the end, they relented except for the squad, you know, the most radical of them. They didn't go along. But the rest of them, they had about 13 Republicans as well. So it was actually passed on a bipartisan basis. It was already passed in the Senate. So it's now going to go to President Biden for a signature. So even if the social spending bill never happens, this is a major, major accomplishment. It's the first major accomplishment of the Biden administration. So let's just briefly, Brad, go over what's in this monster. $1.2 trillion total. $110 billion for roads, bridges, and major projects. $66 billion for railroads, both passenger and freight rail. $65 billion for high-speed internet to get the broadband out to everybody. $47 billion for protecting against the climate change. $65 billion for the electric grid. $39 billion for mass transit. $25 billion for airports, modernizing airports, $55 billion for improving drinking water, $21 billion for environmental cleanup, $16 billion for ports and highways. I could just go on and on and on. Billions, millions, and billions of dollars here. So we have really not had a major investment in infrastructure since Eisenhower put in the interstate highway system.
But it's still a positive thing,
and it's going to bring a lot of spending to the economy, another stimulus. I kind of wonder where the workers are going to come from to do all this, because as it is, we have 11 million unfilled jobs, and employers are desperate to, you know, take people out of prisons to hire them because there's nobody to hire, basically.
We can't even get them to drive school buses and drive trucks to keep the supply chain intact, and now we're going to strengthen bridges and keep dams from bursting. I guess it's hard to argue about the need for the hard infrastructure, but it seems as though one bill is being held hostage over another. This is to get the soft infrastructure passed, which is going to be a much harder hurdle, between the mainstream and the progressive.
Where's the deal? The deal that they made is vote for the hard infrastructure bill, and we're going to do a Congressional Budget Office scoring on the soft infrastructure bill and see what it actually will cost and how much it's going to add to the deficit. President Biden said it will not cost anything. It will be revenue neutral. Nobody believes that.
Well, it's not possible.
So even the hard infrastructure bill is not exactly revenue neutral. That's going to add hundreds of billions of dollars to the deficit, but at least we'll have bridges that don't fall down. So it'll probably pass in the House, barely, the social spending. But in the Senate, it has to get all 50 Democratic votes because the Republicans are completely against it. And Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kristen Sinema of Arizona are still not convinced that this is a good idea to do. And even though they've made concessions, they wanted $3.5 trillion. Now it's down to about $1.8 trillion, and they may want it lower. So we'll see. I don't think it's going to pass. I do not think it's going to make it through the Senate in its current form.
Well, this is the soft infrastructure. Pretty, this is all for Medicare and family leave and all that kind of thing. And, it's lovely stuff, but we can't afford it in the view of many.
Including the moderate Democrats. Now, one thing that changed from when this had been held up to when it got voted on was the elections, where the Republicans really did very, very well. They got the Virginia governorship. They won a lot in Long Island. They almost won the New Jersey governorship, which is a very, very blue state. I think that was a bit of a wake-up call to the progressives, saying you got to get something done and not just have political wrangling all the time. I think that helped push it over the edge.
You know how we're going to pay for all of this. We're going to tax cryptocurrency.
Well, there's something in there for cryptocurrency. Part of the soft infrastructure bill is to increase the IRS budget dramatically to increase enforcement, which is not particularly a popular thing. They're saying if you have $10,000 worth of transactions in your bank account over a year, that the IRS will be able to monitor your account transaction by transaction to see if you're avoiding taxes.
Then that could be a real stall out.
Right. There's a lot of things in the social spending bill that a lot of people will object to. Another one that affects Massachusetts is the salt tax deduction, which was limited dramatically in the 2017 bill, the salt, the state and local tax. A lot of people in the high tax states want to get that repealed. And they may not vote for the big deal if they get that. So it's just a very, it's much less bipartisan and much more difficult to figure this out. So we'll see what happens. But my prediction right now is the soft infrastructure bill is not going to happen.
Are you hearing anything out of Washington, D.C. that gives you any hope that there are any plans in the works to do anything about runaway inflation and supply chain interruption?
Well, they're trying to do things with the supply chain. They're now making the ports work 24/7, which they're not kind of set up to do. Part of it is we need literally 100,000 truckers. We do not have enough truckers to haul the stuff away from the ports, even once it gets unloaded. They can increase salaries, but that's part of the supply chain disruption. So they talk about it. Apparently, President Biden recently had a meeting with FedEx and UPS about how to do this, but we need a lot of truckers, and this is causing inflation. I mean, not only inflation, but the products people want aren't even on shelves. You're entering the holiday season with empty shelves. Not a particularly good situation. And inflation is going up. We had a number for the producer price index up at an 8.6% annual rate, which is the highest it's ever been. And the same thing, consumer inflation is about 6.4%. Part of that is gasoline, which has gone up dramatically. We're up to near $4 a gallon and probably going higher. But food is going up as well. And labor is going up. Because of the shortage of labor, labor is really strengthening its muscles here and demanding and getting higher wages, which is good for people. But it also means the businesses have to pass that on in the form of higher prices to consumers. This is the classic kind of wage price spiral that we had in the 1970s. So I don't think anything that Biden's going to, in fact, the infrastructure bill seems to me is going to be more inflation, because what you're doing is adding a huge amount of demand to an economy that already has plenty of demand and not enough supply. So that to me is inflationary.
Well, since all these things that we experienced back in the 70s are happening again, hey, why don't we go back and take something else from the 70s, like a wage price freeze?
Yeah, that would not go down very well. We could bring back win buttons. Remember, Gerald Ford had
yes.
Whip inflation now buttons. That worked. Yeah.
I think we may be more inclined to see the misery index come back again. Well, Jordan, what else should we be looking at right now?
Bitcoin.
Okay.
Cryptocurrencies are going wild. The stock markets have been soaring to one record high after another, but Bitcoin is back over 68,000 now. It had gotten up to about 64,000 back in the spring. That went down to about 30,000. Now it's soaring to one record all-time high after another. And all the other cryptocurrencies, Ethereum, Litecoin, all of them are going up astronomically. I think some of it is a reaction to all this inflation we talked about. In the past, gold would have been the inflation hedge. And now I don't think it is anymore. I think people are going to cryptocurrency. So I think there's a lot of momentum to go on the upside there. Some people say it'll hit 100,000 maybe by the end of this year. So a lot of people still sitting on the sidelines, not really understanding cryptocurrency, but I think you've got to get it. I have some resources at moneyanswers.com that help you do that. One's called Paxful. Another one's called eToro that help you learn about the whole cryptocurrency market. It's not hard to get into, and you can just play it that way. So that's a definite driving factor. And more and more places are using cryptocurrency in buying and selling things, eBay and PayPal and Etsy. And apparently the new mayor of New York, Eric Adams, wants to get paid in Bitcoin. So I think you should get paid in Bitcoin too, actually, Brett.
I'd be grateful to get paid in bips. That would be okay with it. Well, is it too late to get into that game? Has the train left the station?
Train has not left the station. It's
really?
Still only about $7 trillion market. Gold is about $10 trillion. Lots more room on the upside. More and more institutions are getting into it and trading it, and a lot of wealthy people are getting in there around the world. It's a global currency, really. So I don't think there's anything to stop it, and it's really an inflation hedge. A year ago it would have been about 30,000. Now it's 68,000. I think it's going to go much, much higher.
Well, I think we'll hold here because this is already a lot to digest. This is Jordan Goodman, America's Money Answers Man, who appears exclusively in Western Mass on Pioneer Valley Radio and is reachable through his website, moneyanswers.com. Jordan, great to have you with us, and we look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks so much, Brad. Appreciate it.
Jordan will be with us again soon. Heartbeat reporter Mark Auerbach has attended the Hartford Symphony to hear some glorious music. Mark?
Brad, I've got a review of the Hartford Symphony Orchestra's Masterwork Series at the Bushnell. And after experiencing that rock concert exhilaration of the recent MOSO, Musicians of the Springfield Symphony Orchestra concert with Maestro Kevin Rhodes, and knowing that MOSO's soon-to-be-announced performance roster is still a few weeks down the road, I ventured to Hartford to catch a performance of the Hartford Symphony Orchestra. The HSO is our closest option for professional-quality, large symphonic music performances these days, and their programming, and this concert featured music of Aaron Copland, Bernstein's Symphonic Dances from West Side Story, and a jazz work for orchestra by Wynton Marsalis, was well with the road trip. The Hartford Symphony Orchestra and the Springfield Symphony Orchestra both have a lot in common. Their concert halls are exquisite. The Bushnell's Intimate Belding Theater, across the foyer from the larger hall where the Broadway musicals play is comfortable and spacious, more intimate than Springfield Symphony Hall. Both venues are surrounded by convenient, well-lit free parking. Both orchestras have dynamic conductors. Hartford's maestra, Carolyn Kwan, with a distinguished career in concert venues and opera houses worldwide, came to America to go to high school up the river at Northfield Mount Hermon. She got her college degree at Smith. You may spot some familiar faces amongst the musicians. Violinist Candace Lammers grew up in Long Meadow. Violist James Gustafson, bass player Mark Zeckel, bassoonist Yeichi Wang, trombonist Brian Veal, and tuba player Stephen Perry are current or former members of the Springfield Symphony Orchestra and MOSO. The Hartford Symphony captured the rugged West with Aaron Copland's quartet music from his ballet Rodeo, originally choreographed by Agnes DeMille, then went smooth with Wynton Marsalis' Concerto in D for violin and orchestra, with concertmaster Leonid Sigal in the spotlight and Stephen Perry on sousaphone. The second half of the program opened with the vibrant symphonic dances from West Side Story, a pulsating tour de force and crowd pleaser, equally at home in the classical and pop realms. Laura Cartman's All-American celebrated the music of American women composers. It's a new work written in 2019 to open a Hollywood Bowl pops concert. Cartman has versatile credentials, writing for film, opera, and ballet, and a slew of Emmy Awards for her work. All-American is exciting. The Copland and the Bernstein pieces were created for dance, or in the case of the latter, dance sequences in a powerhouse of a musical. The Marsalis piece is cool and jazzy. The Cartman piece conjures up Americana with every rhythm in the kitchen sink. Great program choices performed with style to an enthusiastic audience. You can check out the Hartford Symphony Masterworks Series that continues December 3rd through 5th with a program showcasing the music of Tchaikovsky and Grieg, featuring Maestro Kwan and pianist Gabriela Martinez. Program highlights will include Grieg's incidental music from the play Peer Gynt and Tchaikovsky's Act One finale of The Nutcracker. The Pops presents its annual Holiday Cirque Spectacular, a mix of holiday music and acrobatics, December 11th. For details about both concert pairs, hartfordsymphony.org. For Pioneer Valley Radio, I'm Mark Auerbach.
That's our ArtsBeat reporter, Mark Auerbach. A reduction in COVID cases has motivated some changes in Bay State Health System's visitor policy. Bay State Medical Center, Bay State Noble Hospital, Bay State Wing Hospital, and Bay State Franklin Medical Center have noted these changes. One visitor is allowed at a time, previously only one visitor per day, for patients who are not in the ICU. Two parents or guardians are allowed at a time for pediatric patients in the emergency department, surgery, procedures, and inpatient. For OB patients, two designated care partners, previously only one, are allowed in the room during delivery. For postpartum patients, the designated care partner and an additional care partner may now visit together at the bedside at any given time during visitation hours. Well, according to Bay State Health, a care partner may be a relative, a partner, friend, or anyone the patient chooses to have at their side during care. Springfield Water and Sewer Commission's Customer Assistance Program, CAP, is intended to support low-income single-family homeowners with water and or sewer accounts where the commission eligible and approved customers can receive a one-time annual account credit of up to $125. Customers may reapply annually. Eligible direct retail commission customers in single-family, owner-occupied homes may apply for the credit. And the credit is applied to the account once per fiscal year, and customers may reapply each year. Customers must meet a minimum in annual water and sewer charges of $125. They must also average less than $125 in annual water and or sewer charges and are eligible for a reduced credit proportionately based on their annual average charges. Applications now being accepted. And here it is, right from the owners. Feeding Hills 911 Burgers and Dogs. Dear friends of the 911 Burgers and Dogs, here it goes. It is with bittersweet emotions that I inform our amazing customers and friends that Mary and I are retiring on Sunday, November 21st, 2021. The business that we started almost 40 years ago will become a memory that we will cherish, as I hope you will. May God bless all of the more than 2 million people that we have had the privilege of serving, and may God bless the founders, my mom and dad. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Amen. Dino and Mary Mercadante. Finally, actor Dean Stockwell, perhaps best known for his role as Admiral Al Calavici in the sci-fi TV series Quantum Leap, has died at the age of 85, according to multiple reports. He was a long-standing actor in a lot of movies and was a child star at one time, too. He died peacefully in his sleep at his home on Sunday. Thank you very much for being with us, and thank you to Jordan Goodman and Mark Auerbach for being a part of our program today. Our next show up online tomorrow morning, Thursday, at 6 a.m. and available to you on demand throughout the day. I hope you're with us for continued information, uber local information, and conversations here on Pioneer Valley Radio. I'm Brad Shepherd, and we'll talk again.
The proceeding was a presentation of Pioneer Valley Radio. Copyright
2021.
All rights reserved.